This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, I hope that everyone endured the holidays and had just a great time. I certainly did. I got a chance to visit with my boys and their families. I guess it was kind of funny in one particular case when we had were visiting with one son in his hometown. We had problems with, first of all, it was the sewage because we had two families. The in-laws were there at the house and also over Christmas. And the shower started backing up, and then the toilet started backing up. We had to call out a plumber on Christmas Eve to come out. Well, during that time, then we had twin five-year-old granddaughters, and one of them got sick, which is always a good thing during Christmas Eve. And so she was throwing up and not in good shape. And so then my wife went to the pharmacy to get some stuff for her stomach and took the other twin with her. Well, while in the store, of course, this girl got sick, took her out to get in the car, and she got sick in the parking lot, and then put her in the car, and then she got sick in the car. And that's great. So we finally got home, started to get the kids better, and then while we were gone, found out that the microwave went out. Well, that's great. So it's one thing after another. And so then we had to go down to before the pawn shop closed. We were able to find one for like $20, heck of a deal, for a fairly new microwave that would get us through the night. With all the people there, we're going to be in the house and just warming up some food and cooking and whatnot. But and so we finally got out of there just before the blizzard hit. They were covered with, I don't know how much snow, but quite a bit. And as we got into Dallas, we got there just in time for a tornado to hit, which was quite devastating. It was about 20 miles south of where we were staying with our other son and his family. It killed 11 people and wiped out quite a few homes. Unfortunately, it was quite tragic. But it just seemed like that this was like Christmas vacation with the Griswolds all over again. Just, you know, what else is going to be going wrong with all this? So, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. I hope that you guys had a good experience, a pleasurable one, one that you can remember in the future, maybe not quite remembering like that. Well, I know that one of the things that is a phenomenon in television today is blank has talent. I guess it's like America's Got, I guess it's Got Talent, not has, it's bad grammar. Anyhow, it's blank Got Talent. And I say blank because it's not just America's Got Talent, but Britain's Got Talent, India's Got Talent, Russia. I mean, pretty much this is a worldwide phenomenon on television. Well, today on the Magic Word Podcast, we're going to talk with Sean McMaster, who has been on America's Got Talent. And there have been other magicians that I've had on this podcast in the past talking about their experience. And everyone has a little bit different reason as for why they got on there, what they wanted to do with it, how far they went, and their success or lack thereof. And I think that the story that Sean has to share is quite interesting, and his reasons for wanting to do it as well. And it's something that I think that every magician who might have any interest at all of getting a little publicity and even perhaps considering getting onto America's Got Talent or one of the other Got Talent shows around the world might want to consider. This is a story that Sean eventually wants to write up and publish in a magic magazine somewhere, but you get to hear it first here on The Magic Word. He goes on then to talk about some of the movie bit parts that he's had and some of the ideas that he's had, the creative ideas that are in his show, and perhaps some people who have taken his idea without asking for it, some who have asked for permission. Well, I'm starting to get way ahead of myself. I'm going to let him explain this all in his own words, so please welcome my guest, Sean McMaster, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and today I have as my guest Mr. Sean McMaster. Hi there, Sean. How are you?
Great, Scott. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad that you are here, and it's glad to have you on The Magic Word Podcast, because you are someone that should be, I'm going to say, kind of famous. Some magicians may have seen on America's Got Talent. Was it, what season was that? Like season number 8 or something? Is that right?
Yes, it was season number 8. Yes, that
okay.
Was the one.
But you did make it to...
I was on it for about 12 seconds.
Well, there you go.
I was on.
And the effect was that... Well, I'm not going to spoil it. Go ahead and tell what what you did.
All right. Well, the effect is something that is my closer, that I've been using as the closer of my act since probably 1998.
For corporate shows or the Magic Castle or?
Well, it was originally I was doing a lot of comedy clubs at that point in time.
Okay.
And it was something that premiered in a comedy club, but I have then since taken it on the road as far as corporate shows and the Magic Castle. I do it all the time at the Magic Castle, and yes, many times at the end, that's the closing piece of any of my corporate shows. I will do it. Yes.
And you live in Los Angeles, so there were a lot of comedy clubs around there where you could perform and work that out.
Mm-hmm. Right. I live just north of Los Angeles, but probably about 45 minutes away from Magic Castle.
Yeah.
So So it's basically a card reveal, but it's a card is selected and I make a big fanfare out of this orange, you know, that I present at the very beginning of the show. And then it sits there the entire show, and we come back to it at the end, and supposedly the selected card is going to appear in the orange, and I cut the orange open, and, you know, with great fanfare, I pull the card out, and it's the wrong card. And I then continue to frantically, I start looking for this person's card. And I find cards everywhere. I'm running out in the audience, and I'm finding cards in people's purses and in their jacket pockets, all in an attempt, you know, screaming the names of those cards up to the person on the stage, if this is their card. And, of course, it's not. And so I come back to the stage after all of that mayhem, and I am apologizing, basically, to the volunteer on stage. And I finished by saying, well, I was really hoping it wouldn't come to this, but I guess you've given me no other choice. And the theme from Superman starts to play, and I turn my back to the audience, and I essentially take everything that the tie comes off and the coat comes off. I whip the glasses off. I drop my pants, but I'm standing in a full-on Superman outfit with, you know, royal blue and the red underwear and the whole bit. And
right.
I turn dramatically, and the card that they chose is emblazoned on the chest of my shirt, and it usually gets a great response.
So instead of the big red S, you have a big picture of their playing card.
Exactly, it's a big silk screened card on the chest of my shirt. Yes.
So you don't have on a cape or anything, I guess.
No. We're people have suggested that, and I haven't found a good logical way to work in the cape, and it's already hard enough wearing that underneath my suit, my tie.
Yeah.
So a cape would be a little bit problematic, I think. But I'm not against the idea. People have suggested some ideas as far as how to work in a cape.
Yeah, and then of course having a big wind fan over to the sides of the stage, so that's way that's blowing, and the cape is going off to the side, you know, and you're standing in the perfect position.
Yeah. Superman position, exactly. So America's Got Talent contacted me. I want to say, for the record, that I never contacted America's Got Talent, and I'm not a big fan of that show, and the only time I really watch it is when friends of mine, you know, are performing on it.
Right.
So it's a long story. I mean, that one that I'm going to eventually write up and maybe submit to one of the Magic publications.
Well, we've got some time. Let's hear the story.
Well, the story is they contacted me, and I was initially against it, and was against it for a long time. In fact, in all the communications that the producers had with me, every time I thought I was out, it was like they were pulling me back in by being as accommodating as they could possibly be. I mean, like music rights, you know, that type of thing. It's like, well, I know you're never going to get the rights to use this music, but here it is, and let's see what happens. And as soon as I hit send on that email on that particular message to that particular producer, I thought, okay, well, this is it. This is going to get me out, and, you know, that'll be my excuse to not do it. And they found a piece of music that worked almost perfectly. I mean, it was almost identical to the piece that I normally use, and they had the rights to use that. So, I mean, every little aspect that I could throw at them, they somehow or another worked their way around it and accommodated me, and I ended up going. And I actually contacted a few people, because this was the season just after the season that Eric Buss and Rudy Kohler were on. And if you remember that, they were just eviscerated by the judges.
I do.
Mm-hmm. And I was very cautious about that. And when the producers first contacted me, I said, well, give me a couple days to think about it. I really don't think it's going to work. because they really wanted the Superman routine. And I said, this is a 5 to 6 minute routine and you're giving me 90 seconds and there's no way that I can fit that in there. And they said, well, we might be able to give you a little bit more time. I mean, that immediately they were very, very accommodating. I said, well, what if I do something different that will fit within your time frame? No. We want the Superman routine. And all right, well, I really don't think it's going to work, but let me think about it. And so I actually remember calling Eric Buss, and I talked to him. Eric and I are friends, and I called him. I said, what's funny is I left a message on Eric's machine, and he called me back later that evening, and he goes, I'm betting America's Got Talent contacted you. And I went, yeah, that's exactly why I'm calling you. And I asked him, you know, his advice. And honestly, I thought it was interesting that Eric said, well, it really comes down to, what are you hoping to do? I mean, are you hoping to win it, or are you just doing it for the exposure and maybe use the footage? And mm-hmm. I said, no, I'm not hoping to win it. I don't even want to continue. I want to do it once, and that's all I want to do. And he said, then I say, do it. He goes, what's the worst that could happen? I said, what happened to you is what's the worst that could happen.
Yeah, exactly. But,
to me, Eric's advice to me was, he said, you know, I say, do it. I say, do it. You know, and I was very surprised that he said that. He goes, you know, because that, he goes, if you're just in it for the exposure and for the footage, then do it, you know, and it hasn't affected me adversely in any way. Yeah, sometimes, you know, there's some negative comments that pop up on the little YouTube clip of it when it appears online. And he mm-hmm. goes, but overall, he goes, as far as my shows are concerned and is it affecting my performances or the amount of performances I do, he says, it really hasn't affected me one way or the other. I don't think that I've gotten more from it, but I certainly haven't gotten less from it, you know. So, and some people notice him from America's Got Talent, and it's all very positive when that happens. So he says, why not? Just, you know, try it and see what happens. So I did that. And I, you know, I was a little nervous at the time, but, and there was a lot of, I mean, reality television in general is just, it's such a misnomer because it's far from reality. They set things up and they set up situations, and that was happening with me behind the scene. I was in the Pantages Theater, which is where the LA show, that particular LA show was shot. I was in the Pantages Theater backstage when, if you remember, Special Head.
Oh, yeah. That was the guy who did the levitation, right?
That's correct. And I was backstage behind that curtain while he was performing it. And the producers with the cameras backstage wanted me to act nervous or concerned because this other magician's getting this great response and I haven't gone on yet. And they wanted, you know, they just wanted footage. They wanted to set up situations, and I just didn't want to play the game. I didn't want to be there in the first place, Scott, you know, I just wanted to go out and do my thing and
get off. It. Yeah.
So I didn't play the game, and I could very well have played the game because I had recently gotten a divorce from a 23-year marriage at that point in time, 22, 23 year. And I had taken my kids, away from the house, and we had to find our own place. And it was my life was kind of chaotic at that point in time. And I could very well have sat down when they shot those personal shots where you're sitting there talking to the camera about your history and your past. I could very well played that card and mm-hmm. maybe had been looked at a little bit more favorably, you know, in producers and eyes and right. how they presented me on camera. But I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to pull her into it. I don't want to pull the kids into it. That wasn't the reason I was there. I was there because they contacted me and I wanted to just display my wares and go.
Right.
And, so I didn't do any of that stuff. And so I think that's why I ended up being shown in the light that I was shown when it appeared on season 8.
Yeah. It just showed, as I recall, just a snippet kind of the whole show. As you said, it was about 12 seconds. It wasn't the full bit of you coming out.
Oh, no, it was far from the full bit. And I'll tell you what happened is when I went out there, I had worked out a presentation that would fit within their time frame. And they did give me more time. In our negotiating back and forth, the producers said, well, we'll give you a little bit more time. I said, well, how much more time are we talking? And they said, well, maybe, you know, maybe 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 15 seconds. And I said, well, okay. I'll see what I can work out. And I worked out a version that is far from the version that I normally perform. But I worked out a version that I thought would work. And I even was going to run out to the judges panel and find find a card underneath Mel B's butt when she stood up. That's one of the things I do in my show is I do run out in the audience and I'm yelling at a woman to stand up, stand up, stand up, and she stands up. And one of the cards I find when I'm trying to find the selected card is underneath this lady's butt. And I even say, underneath this lady's butt, the seven of diamonds, is that your card? And they say no, and I run off. Well, I worked that part in to the America's Got Talent version. Mm-hmm. I was going to run out to the judges panel, and I told the camera people, and they got set the shots up, and it was all ready to go. And I ran through a rehearsal once without the judges there because they didn't know what was going to happen. But I was out on stage and ran out to the panel so they could see where I was going to be and all that. So all that was planned, and the only thing that was known beforehand, as far as I know, I mean, I don't know what the judges are told as far as each of these acts are concerned, but I told them, just let Nick know to stay on stage because I'm going to use him as one of the card reveals. I'm going to reach into his pocket and pull out a card. Don't tell him that, but just let him know that he's going to be the one selecting the card, and I'm attempting to find his card, so he has to stay on stage the entire time. And they did, and Nick did, and it was very nice. All the judges were very nice, very complimentary. I'm not saying this to gloat, but it went really well. I mean, the performance went really well. Standing ovation, people are chanting Vegas. And in my mind, I'm, oh, please don't put me on the Vegas because I don't want to do this.
I don't want to go through.
In my mind, I had reached a successful conclusion, and I was happy with the way it went. And I was happy that I got through it without being eviscerated. And, you know, it was great. And, I mean, people were just in hysterics. This is the Pantages Theater, you know? I mean, and the place
good feeling.
Was packed. And it was just bedlam. Yeah, it was great. It was a great feeling, and it was bedlam. And Howard, you know, said, he said, obviously, you're a very funny comedian. I liked the trick. It was funny. His problem was that the trick was a card trick. And, therefore, he says, we're playing a lot of big stages this year, you know, like Radio City Music Hall, blah, blah, blah. And I feel that because it was a card trick, it's kind of small, and for that reason, it's a no for me. And that's very viable, except the next season, suddenly Close-Up Magic's accepted. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
but anyway,
so
then it went to Heidi. Heidi's line was fantastic. Heidi made me laugh because she looked at me and she goes, you know, there's nothing more adorable than a grown man in a onesie. And which made everybody laugh and made me laugh too. And she gave me a yes. And Mel B, who I found the card underneath, she loved it as well and pushed me on. And then it came down to Howie, and Howie said no. And I was praying in my mind, please, Howie, say no. And he's he's saying, well, you know, and he's not big on, well, wasn't until Matt Franco won it, but wasn't big on magic for a while. You know, and he goes, I just don't know. I'm not sure I want to do this. And it didn't seem that you know.
Now, you're saying Howie Mandel, or was that Howard Stern?
No, Howie Mandel. Howard. Howard liked it, but he thought it was too small.
Okay, gotcha.
But Howie, yeah.
Mandel,
They were chanting at Howie, and they were booing Howie when he was kind of talking the routine down. And finally, he just goes, I got to say no. And in my mind, it was like, what a relief. You know, I did this great. And I exited the stage with a smile on my face, and I was happy. Well, none of that was seen at all. As a matter of fact, when the L.A. show aired, I wasn't in the L.A. show. And I went, oh, well, okay. I guess they didn't need to use me because I didn't play an integral part in any of this, you know. And it was just the audition shows anyway.
Right.
So I guess I just didn't make it. And I figured, okay, that's it. I chalked it up to experience. No big deal. Then June comes around. And I'm performing in Mexico at the time. June comes around, and I get an email from the producer that I had been working with saying, hey. And every email from America's Got Talent is just inundated with exclamation points. Everybody there is so excited because you're living your dream, and this is fantastic, and isn't this wonderful? And, hey, here are some America's Got Talent icons that you can use for any of your social media posting because you're going to be on tonight's show. Tell your friends. And I went, no, that's not going to happen. it was I should have the LA show. Who knows what they're going to show tonight?
Yeah.
And I was in Mexico. I wasn't able to see it. And then all of the stuff started popping up on some of my Facebook page posts, and some messages came in and about, you know, he was there and, oh my gosh, you know, some people were I don't know. It was negative comments toward America's Got Talent about how they presented my show. And it wasn't until, you know, a couple of weeks later that I finally got to see it. And when I saw what it was, and I don't know if you remember it, but it was they were talking about magicians. It was basically a magicians that failed montage, you know.
And I do remember that. Is that the one that when Dan Stapleton was on and maybe Becky Blaney, and they kind of showed them walking off the stage and the birds weren't flying or something? They had some other magicians on, not just you.
But yeah, the first two that appeared though were when I saw the first one, it was some kid that was just, I don't even remember his name. And in fact, no, thank God, none of their names appeared. So my name is not really
associated with that
on screen.
Yeah,
it's my image, right? So but it was some kid that got up on stage and just failed a trick horribly. And then the next one was the guy that was lighting fire from his butt. I don't know if you remember that, but those are the first two people that popped up when they started talking about magicians. And then I went, oh, this is not going to go well. And I think I was the third or fourth that popped up. And all you saw was Nick pick a card and me take off my clothes.
Yeah.
And there's his card. Yes, I got his card. But it cut away from me to some of the judges, and it was showing the judges. I think they actually used judges' responses from other acts, because I can tell you, if you watch the video, those responses, while I'm performing, never occurred because they all enjoyed it, with the exception of Howie. But they all enjoyed it, and they were showing pictures of Mel and why have I forgotten her name now? But anyway,
Heidi Klum.
They both, you know, Heidi Klum, exactly. Heidi, you know, has this very odd look on her face, but she was one of my supporters. She loved the act. So they edit in other judges' responses from other acts.
What about responses from the audience? Did they also edit in some negative and boos, or did they have applause?
No. It was so fast, Scott, I don't even remember that you could even hear any of the response. It was so quick. You heard a little bit cheering, I think, a little bit, but it was just, you know, it was so fast that you couldn't really register any kind of response. And then they went to Howard and took away all of that stuff that Howard said about how much he liked it and why he was saying no. It just went to him. He goes, it's a no for me. And that was all they used of his response. And so it was just, you know, it was just creating the reality that they wanted to create. But that's basically the story in a nutshell. I intend on writing it up and giving a few more details, but that's basically it.
Right. Well, that's interesting. You know, I think, first of all, many of us have been contacted each season. I've gotten phone calls or leave messages on my machine just saying, or an email saying, hey, we're going to be in Houston, or we're going to be in Dallas or San Antonio, someplace in Texas, and we'd like for you to audition. We've seen your videos on your website, et cetera, and want you to. And I don't want to be on just because I don't have an end game. And I think that you were given good advice. Of saying, what is it you want to get out of it? I mean, like in the case of, let's say, Kevin James, that he wanted to put some butts in the seat because he had a show there in Vegas, and so he wanted to have more exposure. And several other people have done the same thing as well. You know, Murray Sawchuk and Nathan and others have a reason for actually being on there. Or those who might say, I'm a young guy and I want to eventually have my own show in Vegas, and this has been a dream, and you can kind of play that up, which is the second thing. I think that you have to have a very good story that will pull on the heartstrings of the general public who are watching these, quote, reality type shows. And in that case, I have another friend, Dan Dunn, here in Houston, and Dan is one of these guys who makes or paints these huge pictures, you know, like in the
right.
Basketball games and halftime or something, you know, in the middle of the court, turn them upside down. It's a picture of somebody else, you know, Ray Charles or somebody. Anyhow, and right. He was on there one time, and they were saying, well, what is this going to mean to you? What, you know, if you win, you know, how will this change your life? He said, well, probably not too much. I mean, I perform all over the world doing these paintings already. I just was in Tokyo last weekend and et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, the money will be great, but, so it's like they couldn't do anything with him. So he said, okay, well, go on out there. So, yeah. You know, he didn't.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened to me, too. That's exactly what happened to me. They were asking me the same types of questions. And I went, well, I've been doing this professionally for 23 years. You know, it's not going to change that much, you know. But it was just because I perform all over the place. And it's not like I'm trying to make this mm-hmm. my career. This is my career, you know.
Right.
And I don't know. It was just odd all around.
I would think that if someone is going to seriously consider going on this, you have to. It's just like in life. You have to have a long range plan. What is your 1 year, 3, 5, 15, 30 year plan with your life? Where do you want to be at certain times? And what do you want to accomplish with this? Do you want to use this so that way that it goes on your CV, so on your resume that it looks good that you are going to be someone who's been on. Well, let's say in England, you got Britain's Got Talent. Well, heck, for that matter, I guess they've got India's Got Talent and Russia. I mean, they have this as a worldwide phenomenon as far as the television reality show of something, you know, like this, people having talent. So you have to look at it and say, well, by being on television, will that give me more credibility that I can put in my promotional material, and will I get more shows out of it? Just right. As you had said, that wasn't necessarily something that was going to make one difference or another of booking more shows or not, nor did you have a long-term plan of doing something more than what you're already doing. So if you're doing it kind of as a lark and saying, well, that'd be kind of fun, this is one more thing, it wasn't on my bucket list, but it is now, and I can check that off, you know, then that's fine. I'd say go do it.
Right. Yeah, and that was great advice that I got from Eric. It was just like, well, okay, you know, again, if this is just something that you're looking for as far as more exposure and to use in your advertising, then why not? You know, go and do it. Because like he said, he was the one that said it didn't affect him much either way, you know, and it's just something more that he can add to his credits. And that's really why I did it.
Well, for the longest time also, just as you pointed out then too, Sean, is that they didn't like magic or magicians. And until Matt Franco had won,
right,
that
right.
I didn't think the magicians were even going to have a chance of getting very far on up the ladder, because they kept making fun of them, or that was really not at all what they wanted. So I thought, well, why would you want to go on where more than likely that you're not going to go on very far? You're not going to win. You know, the odds are stacked against you.
Right.
And so once the magician won, then they got to look at it the other way as well. A magician's already won. I mean, it's kind of like, will we have another ventriloquist win? I guess Paul Zeenan, you know, had followed up after Terry Fader had done very well, certainly. Sometimes they do. But I think 1 year a dog act won. And so, well, will another dog act win? So I think sometimes that people will rush after something thinking, okay, well, that person has opened the door, so now I can go and do that. That may not necessarily be the case, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely.
But I would still say that's been very good for magic and magicians in general, that phenomena of this, of the series. I'm talking about internationally, because again, it's everywhere. Because when I'm performing, and I'm sure you too, that they say, well, did you watch America's Got Talent? Did you see that magician last night? This guy did such and such. And they couldn't remember the person's name. Sometimes they remember their names, but most times they don't. But they remember the trick because it was just a little snippet, you know, they can remember.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, and I have nothing against magicians going on America's Got Talent, because like you said, it will in the long run help promote magic and put it in a better light the more you see good magic. And Franco is certainly helped in that way. You know,
yeah.
People are, you know, just like when David Blaine first hit the scene. I mean, a lot of people weren't accustomed to close-up magic. But when he hit the scene, suddenly, you know, he brought a new eye and a new light to close-up magic. And I think that's what Matt Franco did here with America's Got Talent. He actually kind of made magic a little bit more viable. viable and acceptable to the viewing public. And right. I think that's great. And I always applaud anybody who can do that. And absolutely. The following season, the next season was Derek. Derek Hughes. He's Derek a friend Hughes, of mine. Right. And mm-hmm. Derek went very far, you know, yeah. and rightfully so, because he's a talented guy, very right. funny guy, and very smart. And right. his magic is just is impeccable. And, right. You know, and he deserved to get as far as he went. And that family story, you know, was interwoven in there expertly. I mean, sure. the producers did a wonderful job of presenting Derek in a very favorable light. And really, none of that I know of is false. I mean, it was all everything that he said and everything that played out as far as the family side of that was true. And you know what? And that's the type of guy that they need. They need someone like that.
Right. Right.
You know, who's this family man and, you know, just all around nice guy.
I think you got a very good point there, too, Sean, and that is that if somebody is considering going on, you do need to have an angle. And it's the same way whenever you're going to promote yourself and you're trying to get some free publicity from the local media, whatever that might be, television, newspaper, radio, whatever, that you should have some sort of an angle that's going to differentiate you from somebody else. But more importantly, have that hook that they think that their audience would like to see or hear. And if you don't have that hook for that show, in addition to the talent you're presenting, then you're not going right. to go very far, because it's got to have something that's got some legs that's also. You just can't tell the story right. in just one segment. Then the next week they got to say, and besides that I've got this, you know, and I lost my other leg, you know, and I was a Vietnam veteran. I don't know. You just got to go on, you know, so right. there are so many different kinds of things like, oh my goodness, you know, that this guy has really had some hardships as he's been brought up, you know, and they call him lucky.
Yeah.
And so,
right.
So I think that you have to look at that angle.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of people just unfortunately think it's a matter of you presenting your talent and that's it. No, it's a story. You need to be a likable character.
Right.
You need to be maybe come off as the underdog, or at least have these people rooting for you, not just for your talent, but for your backstory. And I'm not saying make up a backstory, but I'm saying present a good backstory, because that's what they're looking for. You know, and yeah, that's what you need to be armed with when you go on America's Got Talent. Not just your right. brand of talent, but the story that you're going to sell to these people, because that's what they're looking to be sold on this.
Right. And it's probably a good idea if you have a couple of things in your pocket, or at least some good consultants that you can talk to. Because what if, let's say, Sean, that you would have gotten through? What would you have done for your second thing?
I had some ideas of what I was going to do for my second thing, and I already had some people in mind to contact the moment they said, okay, yeah, you're moving on to Vegas. I had some ideas, but I was hoping that I didn't have to, you know, resort to those. And luckily I didn't, but yeah, no, I had some different ideas of what I'd do, and it would have been more conducive to what they were looking for. I mean, in my mind, I was thinking, okay, I got past the Superman thing, and that's what they were really jonesing for, and so now I'll come up with some stuff that is, you know, a lot more conducive for the environment and the amount of time given.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So kind of going off a little bit from television into an allied art, that would be in film, that you also had a bit part. I don't remember if it was a talking part or just you were seen in the background with a bunch of other magicians in Desperate Acts of Magic.
Yeah, it was Desperate Acts of Magic, and it was something that the director, Joe Gold, had asked me to be in as just an extra. And then there's this scene, I guess, that ended up being, I guess, one of their favorite scenes was when it was the beginning of this magic competition at a convention. And Joe's direction to me, he just, okay, look, here's all I want you to do. He goes, you're at a magic convention, and just do whatever you think your character would do to prepare for a competition at the magic convention. And I went, that's it? All right. Well, anything? Yeah, anything. And so I did what you saw in that scene. It was just, I was improvising it, waiting for him to go, okay, no, you know what? Let's not go there. Let's not do that. But everything I did, he accepted. And there it was. So it's all on film there in all grand and glorious color for you to see. It was fun to do. All it was just me going through, like, getting dressed, I was getting undressed. I was in the Superman outfit already, so I was taking off my suit and my tie and coat and everything, not in the way I do in my act. I'm just like preparing for the competition, and so I'm
right.
taking off my tie and I take off the Superman outfit's there, and then I just start stretching. I'm starting to do like kind of calisthenics, and I'm checking the angle of my rubber chicken, and I'm doing all sorts of stuff in the background while a serious conversation between Joe Gold and Jonathan Levitt are taking place. But you can see me behind right. Joe, and Jonathan, who's a very good friend of mine. He came up to me after that shot. He goes, you know what? He goes, it was all I could do not to just break up in Joe's face, because I had to be staring right at you when the scene was taking place. So I was doing all of that wackiness right in the line of sight of Jonathan's line of sight. So it was fun. It was fun to do.
Well, now you said you're a friend of Joe's, so that's how you got the extra? Or, I mean, there wasn't general casting.
I'm a friend of Jonathan's. Joe and I are friends too. No, Joe had come and seen me perform in a couple of other venues and also at the Magic Castle, and then that's when he asked if I would mind being in it as just kind of an extra. And so that's how I got cast in that.
And that was just a one-day shoot, I guess, for you?
Yeah, actually, it was all day. It was all day, and it was actually shot – that particular scene was shot at Brian Gillis's castle home. Mm-hmm. I forget where exactly it is, but it's in L.A. here. We shot it, up in the upper loft area of that. In fact, the odd thing about that was that was the night – I mean, when we finished shooting, we wrapped that evening because it was an all-day thing – that was the night that we ended up finding and killing Osama bin Laden, because we all gathered around the TV at the end of the – when that shooting wrapped for that evening, we gathered around the TV and started listening to the president talks. So that's when it was – that was the day of that scene.
And that was a point in history. Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, I knew that was filmed at Brian Gillis's home, many of those scenes that took place, because apparently this magic convention was taking place in this hotel, and the hotel was essentially his castle home area.
Yeah, pretty much. It was supposed to be taking place in a hotel, and I don't know, I can't remember if they shot some exteriors of that or not, but it was almost all of the interiors of the convention, the majority of the competition at the convention was shot at Brian Gillis's home. Yeah.
Right. And have you done other films as well?
Only some independent things and only small books. I haven't done any major roles. No, I mean, there's another movie a number of years back, an independent film called Buster and Salazar that I was, played this bubbling magician in a club. And one of the main characters is waiting to go on, and he's watching through the window of the acts that are on before him. And it cuts back to me three times throughout the film, and I see – what was the first one? The first one is me knocking over like an entire – I had a pitcher of water, and I had a bowl and a wine. A bunch of water was sitting on the table, and it was one of those flip-over tables, you know, where you put something on the table and it flips up and everything slides off the table. So it was one of those things. So it was me on stage supposedly performing in front of an audience, and I drop and – everything and stuff falls off my table, and then it cut away, and then it came back to me later on, and I was doing a sawing. I had an assistant up on stage, and I'm sawing through her, and as I finish the sawing, I step back and my hand stays there as if I cut through the wrist of my hand, and I scream at the top of my lungs, and immediately smash cuts away from me. And then the last scene, I had like a napkin that I said, okay, well, here's one that can't go wrong, and I'm holding it, and the thing just bursts into the flames. And then the payoff is it cuts to the guy, the main character outside, who is watching through the window, and it cuts to him, and he looks as if he's looking at me, and he goes, referring to the audience, he goes, "How are they?" And it cuts to me, and I'm charred up and smoking, and my hair is all when I had hair, it was all spiked. And they took burnt cork and just drew it all over my face, and I had smoke just billowing off of me. And I looked at him, and my line was, "That is one tough crowd."
That's funny. Now, in case like that, had you been cast for that? Did you have to go to casting, or did you have an agent who said, "Hey, Sean, I got a job for you"?
This was, like I said, an independent film that was written and, well, co-written by a comedian who I had worked with in the past. And he liked my stuff, and he said, "Would you mind being in this?" And so I, looked at the part and what he wanted me to do, and he said, "You know, what do you?" Because he just kind of left it up to me. He said, "What do you think you can do playing this bumbling magician? I mean, what is some of the stuff that you could come up with?" You know, and he really didn't know what he wanted. He just wanted a bumbling magician up on stage. And so I threw out a number of ideas, and we worked on a couple of things, and I suggested a few things and performed a few things for him. And then we came up with those three bits, you know, the sawing my hand off and, you know, and me catching on fire and the whole bit. So, yeah, that was all, I'm pretty sure that all three of them were my idea, although he may have wanted me, it may have been his idea to have me burnt, you know, at the very end. So I think maybe he might have said, come up with, you know, three bits, but one of them has to involve fire so that you're standing there all charred up and burned at the end. So that may have been his concept, but I came up with the tricks to do, yeah.
Well, I'm always curious about how people get involved with one direction or another as far as making contacts, and it all comes down to networking, I think, and also keeping your eyes and ears open. I mean, just where you were thinking, number one, talking about America's Got Talent, that this was something that you wanted to pursue, and so you took advantage of that opportunity instead of letting it pass, and likewise here, that this was somebody that you'd been working in comedy clubs, and you knew somebody there who had seen you, and so you kept that contact, and through networking that kind of got some opportunities that could lead to something else. You never know.
That's absolutely correct, and networking is such a big part of the magic business, the business end of, well, and it's true with any profession. I mean, networking is very important, but especially, you know, in the performing arts, it's the more people you know, the more resources you have. You know, and you can rely on them. They can rely on you. It's a very, very important part of this business. Yeah.
Right.
It's just helped me out greatly over the years. Networking has been, you know, not only a helpful part, but an enjoyable part. I mean, it's just great to meet these new people with their new talents and what have you. I mean, not just specifically magicians, but I mean, I have friends who are jugglers and balloon artists and clowns and whatever. You know, I mean, you never know when you're going to need to rely on somebody's expertise, and the more people that you have in your network, you know, the better chance you have of solving the obstacles that you come across.
That's true. Well said. Well, you have a very unique kind of niche in which that you've come up with this idea with using the Superman outfit. Have you seen or heard of other people who have ripped off your idea, or seen somebody on YouTube, or you hear of somebody sending you an email saying, hey, somebody's doing your act or something? Have you ever had that happen yet?
Yes, I have. Here's a very interesting story with it. I mean, the act that I do, I mean, like I said, the Superman thing is just a very ending piece of this 45-minute comedy magic act that I perform, you know, like I said, for a number of different corporations. And I was approached by a magician. I do not remember his name. And this story is very interesting because it has a very important lesson in it. It was right about the time that I separated from my wife, and things were just in – well, it was – okay, let's go back. It was just before – it was the summer before I separated from my wife. I got an email from a magician in – I only remember the country, but I believe it was from Denmark. And he sent me an email, and through the broken English – he was writing in English, but – and it was a little bit broken and kind of – and chopped up, but I understood what the majority of the message and the main point. And what he described to me, he said, "My name is such and such, and I'm here in Denmark, and I had been asked to speak for a corporate engagement that the theme of their seminar was how to be a super salesman." And what he described to me in the email, he said it was very similar to the Superman bit that I do. He said, right. I don't remember exactly what his routine was, but he said at the very end, he thought it would be funny if he took off his shirt, and he said, and I was standing in this shirt, and the Superman music is playing, but the shirt is taken off, and on it was some sort of, I don't know if it was the company logo or what it was, but it was something to drive home the point he was making in his. And he said, and the everything leading up to it was kind of similar to what I was doing. And he said, I thought it was a very funny and original routine, and it got a very good response. He goes, and I thought it was very original until a friend of mine directed me to the YouTube video of you performing it on Masters of Illusion.
Yeah.
And he said, so why I'm writing you, the reason I'm writing you is I would like to possibly keep this in my show and make it a part of my regular show, not just a corporate, you know, talk, but an actual part of my Comedy Magic show. Are you opposed to that? Well, when I got it, I thought, okay, I need to reply to him, but stuff was going on in my life that
right.
fell through the cracks. And I don't normally do that, but I totally forgot to reply to him. And that was in like maybe August of that year. Well, then, by October, I was separated and I was trying to piece my life back together, you know, my personal life back
right.
together.
Right.
And I was renting a room at that time. And now it's like November or December of that same year. And I had changed my email address even. I had changed a lot of my contact information and my email address was completely new. So the old email addresses were gone. And I get an email from this same guy to the new email address, which he did not have before.
Was that on your website,
and
or how would he have
he
gotten that?
He refers to his first. Oh, yeah. He probably would have found it. I mean, I had changed it. I think I had changed it on my website by that time. Maybe I hadn't. You know what? I don't know that I had, actually, now that you bring that up, Scott. It may not have been changed yet, because I was in the process of changing all of my contact information online and off, and my print information and all that stuff too. So I don't know. It was. I don't think it was there yet. And he went the extra mile and hunted down this new email address.
Okay.
So he contacts me and he refers to the original email and. He said, you know, I'd like to know if this is something I can still do. And I went, oh my gosh, this has been 4 or 5 months, you know, 4 months at least. And I never replied to him. I need to do this now. And I wrote him back and complimented him on, you know, the diligence, because he could very well have said, look, I tried to contact him. He never responded. I'm going to do this. And he, you know, took it upon himself to do the right thing, hunt me down. And email me again saying, you know, would you allow me to do this? And I wrote him back saying, you know, thank you so much for being as diligent as you were. I appreciate it. You did the right thing. Having said that, I'm going to have to ask you, no, you know, please don't, because it's become a signature piece for me. And it's the way I close my act. And I'd rather you don't do it. And I never heard from him again. And I don't know that he's not doing it, but I'd like to think that he took that and did the right thing and didn't. So I haven't heard that he's been doing it. I had no one's contacted me. And I'm assuming that he took that and said, okay, I'm not going to do
right.
it anymore.
Well, certainly that would be the ethical thing to do to begin with, is to ask someone's permission. If they will do it. In some cases, it could be that they might say, well, I'm not working in your market area and I don't intend to ever be in that market area, Indonesia or wherever you might happen to be. Or even if you're in the U.S. and you plan on just working in your local market in Iowa or someplace and you don't plan on ever being in Florida, then you can say, yeah, sure, that's fine, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I think back, for an example, just as an aside, whenever that Kerry Pollack had come out with Kate and Edith, and he had refined that here at the Magic Island in Houston. I'd worked with him for a long time, and we were good friends. And he had only really done it here and at some comedy clubs. And a friend of mine here in town actually was the one who was authorized to make these plastic cards that he was using and selling. But it was not widely known. And I had performed it at the 4F convention. And everybody came to me afterwards and said, hey, this is great. I remember Doc Eason saying, I can use this. This is great. And he referred to that for a long time as being, you know, Scott's trick. And I had written him and I talked to him and I said, no, this is Kerry Pollack's and all that, made sure that he got all the credit. But interesting, I was performing in, or I was in Michael Finney's Dry Heat Classic golf tournament one time. And at the evening after the golf tournament was over, we all, because many of the guys who were in the tournament were comedians, and so we all performed in his comedy club at the time. That was Finny Bones. And right. I had done some magic, but I was going to do the Kate Needeth, and I had it with me, but I didn't. Because I thought, this is Kerry Pollack's, this is his deal, and he works comedy clubs, and so I don't want to do something that is his turf, if you will. And so later I talked with him, and I told him that I refrained from doing that. He said, you know, I don't work out in that area, and you're perfectly free, and, you know, you could have done it, that's fine, but I appreciate you asking me, and the ethics you had of foregoing that and not doing it, but you could have done it anyhow. But, you know, I thought at the time, this just isn't right, even though it's a marketed thing, but it's in his, on his turf, you know?
Right. No, yeah, you know, and I totally agree with that. I mean, when Harry Anderson, you know, came out and did, you know, the needle through the arm on Saturday Night Live and all the other major television shows. Yeah. Yeah, he marketed it, but you'd be a fool to, you know, in my mind. I mean, yeah, it's a marketed effect, and yes, you can do it, but no one did it as well as Harry did. And it really was, at the time, it was associated with Harry. And even though Harry marketed it and gave you the all the rights to do it, you'd be looked upon as, you know, doing Harry's trick.
Well, now that's another thing then too, Sean, because whenever that Martin Lewis had come out with Cardiographic, and he'd published that, I think, in Genie a long time ago, and it kind of got buried and then it got revived, and then it was marketed. I started doing it, and it's still a staple in my act these many 20 years later or whatever, but for the longest time I was doing it. And then David Copperfield did it on one of his TV specials some years ago after I'd already been doing it. The funny thing was that people who saw that were saying, hey, he's doing Scott's trick, you know. And then on the other hand, after the Copperfield, if they had not seen me, whenever I'm performing, they said, hey, he's doing Copperfield's trick.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And getting back to what you were saying, too, earlier, I've always been very wary about doing stuff that I've seen other performers do that work very well for them. For example, the most recent example of this happened with me. The most recent new piece I put into my act is a thing. It's a Tom Stone idea, and you're probably familiar with it because a lot of people are starting to do it now. And I tend to try and stay away from those types of routines that everybody is doing. Like Cardiographic, for example, a lot of people do Cardiographic, and it's a great trick. But I would rather not do it because there's so many people doing it. I was in the parlor at the Magic Castle probably about a year ago. And Rosa Brecky, who's a friend, he was performing in the parlor, and I went to see his show because I hadn't seen him work for a while. And he had this new piece in his act that I had not been familiar with. I had not seen him do it before, and it worked so well for Rob's character. Rob is just a great performer, and his character is
creative.
Just so... so wonderful. I've been lucky enough to see the evolution of that character by being, you know, associated with the castle. I've seen him change things around, and that character is so fully developed now that it's just wonderful. And he's a very creative mind. Anyway, he's performing this trick, which was actually published is a Tom Stone effect in his book Maelstrom, and it's the thing with six cards. And they're numbered 1 through 6. And the premise is very simple. That if you remember, Rob goes, I have six cards here. And he goes, you know, in an attempt to be able to associate with people more or whatever it is that he says, he goes, I'm going to give you this die and this cup, and you shake it up. And whatever number you shake up on the back of these cards, there's, you know, an activity. And we'll just, do that activity together. So, you know, she says the number, he turns around, it says hug, and they go and hug, but as they hug, he's holding the stand that has all the other remaining cards on it, and as he goes to hug her, the back of the cards flip around toward the audience, and they all the rest of them say kill, 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 and she happened to roll the die and get the only hug card.
Right.
I saw that, and I laughed hysterically, and I said, God, that's perfect for Rob's character, it's perfect. And I went down to him and complimented him on it, and I said, how long have you been doing this routine? And he looks at me and he goes, ever since, you know, Tom published it in the book. Well, I'd totally forgot about that. And I ended up buying those books at Magic Live this past summer, both of the books, and came across the routine again. And that's when our conversation came back to mind. I went, oh, my God, that's right. He told me that this was Tom Stone's routine. And I read the routine. And when I read the routine, many, many, many months later after I'd seen Rob do it, I realized, because I always try and work some personal stuff of my own into my show so that people, even though I'm the character on stage I'm playing is kind of an extension of who I am. And really, as the years have gone by, the character and I have become, there's a wider and wider gap between the character on stage and who I am personally. But there is still kind of some of my personal life that I try and work in there. I actually share a picture, you know, my senior portrait at one point in time, which is, God, it looked horrible, but I use it in my act, and it gets a laugh. And I talk about when I wore braces as an adult. There's a routine that I built around me actually was an adult, and I have my retainer in my mouth and sparks fly out my mouth, and it's all sorts of weird stuff. But anyway, so I always try and work in personal elements, and I had been thinking about working out a comedic magic routine about my divorce and what could I do. Well, when I read that routine, I saw it. I saw that's perfect. That's a perfect way for me to work in jokes about the divorce that I had been writing and that type of thing. And then I ended up actually working on it. And, oh my God, this is perfect. This is perfect. It's completely different from Rob's routine. It's still the same thing. And in my mind, Rob's character so well that I was hesitant to do it. And so I emailed Rob and said, here's my idea. And here's the script. You know, here's some of the jokes of what I'm thinking of doing. I want to do this routine, but will you feel awkward about me doing this? Because I had not seen anybody do it but him.
Actually, David and Lehman have that as part of their routine, too.
Well, and I hadn't seen that yet. But at the time, I wrote him and said, you know, I, if you say yes, then I will do it in my shows, but I won't do it at the Magic Castle because in my mind, that's associated with you at the Magic Castle. And he wrote me back and he thanked me for the email. He said, first of all, so many people have done it at the Magic Castle since I've done it. You shouldn't worry about that. And he said, but you're the only person that's ever written me and asked what I thought about it. And he said, you know, I think it's a funny routine and I'm anxious to see it. So he gave me kind of his blessing to do it. And I have done it at the castle since then, but I wasn't going to until he said it was fine. And I think that's just, to me, that's just the right thing. You know, I mean, even if it is a published routine, if someone has done it and like Rob and worked it out to where it fit his character so perfectly, just like Harry Anderson do the needle through the arm, you know, it's so well meshed together with that particular person. You know, maybe you should think twice about doing it, or at least go and talk to those people. And I mean, that's what I do with Rob. And our presentations are so completely diametrically opposite, but it's the same effect, you know, and it gets a very good response.
You have an excellent point there, Sean. I think the bottom line being to open a discussion. And rather than just doing it and hoping that you're hidden and people are not going to see you, it's a small fishbowl that we live. And so, as magicians in our community. And
you're not going to hide long.
Not for long. Yeah. And so I think that it's going to come out and up to the surface, and you don't want to get, quote, that reputation, certainly. And so I think that if you just open discussion, you know, for an example, when I was getting involved in magic, and I knew about ethics just in general, not about magic ethics necessarily, but I remember asking someone who had a funny line, and I asked the guy if I could use that line in my show. And he said, no, I'd rather you not, because that's something I developed and I kind of have as a tagline, you know, within my show. And I said, fine, I respect that. Well, another magician was listening to him and he said, I can't believe you even asked to use that. He said, first of all, you shouldn't have used it. Number two, you shouldn't have even thought about asking, because it is proprietary. That's somebody else's thing, and you shouldn't even consider using somebody else's line. You know, yeah. Like that. Well, listen, as we start to wrap up, and I appreciate your time, and we could go on for a lot longer, but the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so my question to you, as I pose to all my guests, is what is your magic word? Or it could be a phrase or a sentence, your mantra, your philosophy of life, basically.
Wow.
That's a good one. Wow. Just
that
say
is
wow.
A good one. What is my mantra?
What do you live by? When you wake up in the morning, what is it that kind of motivates you to keep going throughout the day? What do you live for? What's important in your life?
I think it's what's important in my life. Well, obviously, family is important in my life. I mean, but as far as doing what you want to do, I think it's basically just being grateful for, you know, and being grateful for what you have, not comparing yourself to the other people. And I still will sometimes have a problem with that. You know, I mean, you should be aware that the stuff that you're doing is uniquely you, and you should not be comparing yourself to the other people that are out there. Or maybe this person got a bigger gig than you did, or this person got this opportunity on television or what have you. It's like,
right.
Just be grateful that, you know, especially if you're doing it for a living, if you're lucky enough, and I am, and I have been for the last, like I said, the last 23 years, I have been lucky enough to do what I love. And that should be what drives you every day, you know, and it's amazing when you're happy with what you're doing. I mean, it's just kind of that positivity kind of just takes over all of your life in your relationships with your family, with your friends. It's great to be able to have the freedom to do what you like, and it's amazing how that spreads throughout the rest of your life.
Yeah, so basically it sounds like you're saying just to love what it is you're doing, and if it's one word, it'd be gratitude.
Gratitude. That's it. That's exactly it. My magic word, gratitude.
That sounds great. Well, listen, Sean, thank you very much. I appreciate you being a guest.
Scott, thank you very much for having me as a guest. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and look forward to seeing you down the road. I guess you're going to be at Magic Live this summer?
I will be at Magic Live this summer, yeah. I'm all over the country and all over the world, really, so I'll be traveling a lot in 2016. So it's just, you know, they can check out my Facebook page or whatever and see where I'm going to be. And maybe if people want to be notified of when I'm going to be at the castle or where if I'm going to be in their town, they can go to my website and they can sign up for my newsletter. And I send out occasional newsletters letting them know where I'm going to be.
And your website is what?
It's just SeanMcMaster.com.
Okay. That's MC, not MAC. That's Sean MC Master. Right. And Sean is SHAWN.
Right. SHAWN McMaster, MCMASTER.com. Yes.
Right. And your Facebook and Twitter handles?
My Facebook is just, yeah, it's just, I'm just up there, Sean McMaster. And Twitter is also Sean McMaster.
Easy enough. Hope it's easy to remember. Well, good. Sean, thank you again very much. I appreciate it being a guest on the Magic Word Podcast. And so, until next time, that was Sean McMaster, and this is Scotty out. Well, thank you, Sean. That was an interesting discussion about America's Got Talent, and I don't think a lot of people actually enter into auditions with the hope of losing, so that was quite an interesting story, to say the least. Well, next week we will be continuing on with the Magic Serial, that is, the podcast that got started with Gregory Wilson and then continued with Apollo Robbins. This next week we will continue as we talk with Cosmo Solano as he discusses his creation of International Pocket Change and his discussion he had had then with Gregory Wilson about what he put out as Exact Change. And so we'll continue this into future weeks that has to do with thievery in magic. And also what is considered to be thievery versus entitlement and that kind of a thing. Well, as we continue, the best thing I would suggest for you, of course, to make sure that you don't miss another episode is to subscribe to themagicwordpodcast.com. And you could do that by going to our website and clicking on the tab that would say subscribe, and it gives you all the information you need there. And you can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/themagicwordpodcast and on Twitter at magicwordpod. And I do want to thank very much our new friend of the Magic Word, Scott Christoffel. And also thanks a lot to Fred King, who has made a monthly pledge, and also for DJ Devaney, who had upped his pledge a little bit from this past year. Thank you guys for your financial support, because without you, it makes it difficult to meet all the expenses that are related to the production of this podcast. Well, until next week, stay well, get booked, and show gratitude. This is Scotty out.